Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
March 12, 2017, episode number 106, Jersey Proud. Sitting down with New Jersey beekeepers, Landy Simone and John Gott, kicking off the new YouTube channel for BK Corner. Fermented honey garlic. Cheerios Busby has gone missing. Hive designs and thinking on oxalic acid. These are the things we have in store for you this episode. Hi everyone, I'm Kevin England, the host of Beekeeper's Corner Podcast, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 106. Thanks for stopping by. It's a little after 9 p.m. here in New Jersey, and I've settled in tonight to produce the show. And I'm really looking forward to getting a chance to talk to you. We've been on a roll lately, staying with getting these episodes produced and out and running, and a bunch of different things that I've been doing in the beekeeping arena. You can tell I'm very excited to get to spring, and I'm ready to go. I'm looking forward to warmer weather. As it is, sitting here on a Sunday night, Stormageddon is planned. The perfect storm, as it's been described, is coming over New Jersey for Monday night into Tuesday. It's been rather cold since I've last checked in, and no chance to check in on the bees. It's been a couple flying days here and there, but haven't been able to go out and look at the hives. Most of the time when they're flying, I'm at work, but as I would say, I've been able to check on them because I've had a camera up and running, at least for the hive I have sitting at home. Beekeeper asked me through email after that comment recently what kind of cameras I'm using. I'm using Netgear Arlo, A-R-L-O camera. They're wireless. They hook to your home LAN, and my cameras are, LAN is a local area network, sorry, wireless network. The cameras are strong enough to be reached from the hive location into the house, so that's pretty cool. And I have cameras distributed for security purposes. I have a spare camera and a gateway, and I've been playing around with these with the notion of seeing if I can figure out how to open them and let the hive be available for anybody to take a look at. And maybe you can click on and see me out there working my bees sometime this summer. So anyway, I have a lot to cover, but one thing we're not going to have in this episode is a local hive report because, well, they're all nestled in their hives waiting for March 20th and the beginning of spring, which is less than a week or two away. So have a lot to give you this episode. Did a couple sit-downs with Jersey beekeepers, and that's why we are Jersey proud. Let's go ahead and get to segment number one with Landy Simone. For segment number one, we're going to start off this episode with a one-on-one that I recorded with Landy Simone at the New Jersey Beekeepers Association winter meeting. Landy is just one of those New Jersey beekeepers that's active on both the New Jersey scene and with the Eastern Apiculture Society events in other places. Landy's a commercial beekeeper who sells honey and operates a local business in her hometown selling products of the hive. Her business, Goose Rock Farms, is located in Montville, New Jersey. I won't belabor the introduction. Let's go ahead and get to the conversation that I recorded with Landy on February 12, 2017. So I'm in Bordentown, New Jersey, sitting in a parking lot in my RAV4 with Landy Simone. I pulled you out of a conference, Landy, to have a chat because I thought this would be a nice quiet place for us. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, you're welcome. I've never been on a podcast before.
Yes, this is new territory for you. So, Landy, this has been so overdue. You and I have known each other for a while in beekeeping acquaintance for New Jersey Beekeepers Association. And I remember, you know, the big thing was that Landy was the master beekeeper extraordinaire at New Jersey. And I knew you were associated with EAS, but it's been one of those things where over time I've come to know you as a person and a friend and a beekeeper, and this has been on my bucket list for a long time to introduce you to the listener audience here at Beekeeping, at the Beekeeper's Corner podcast. So I'm so glad that you agreed to come sit with me here.
Wow, Thank you. It's never in a million years would I have thought that I was going to be sitting here doing a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what, I mean, Tim does podcasts. You do
yes,
podcasts with
I've
Tim.
Had Tim on my show
and,
quite a few
and
times.
And two of my master beekeeper friends, Dave Burns and John Savishlock, do podcasts. But I never thought I'd do one.
I had them on the show. I did a short little snippet with them in a classroom at EAS this past year and had them on. They're a lot of fun, those
two. Great.
They're like,
they're hysterically funny.
Yeah.
Especially John.
So, Landy, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell me about your business and about how many colonies you run and what goes on in your life.
Okay. Well, my business is Goose Rock Farm, and I've been around, well, I guess I've been keeping bees for about 20 years now, and it's been an enterprise for at least 15 of those years. I've been selling honey and various products and so on in Montville, but I've got bees from Pine Brook to Dover, and this year we're going to put a new yard in Chester, which is really exciting for me because it's going to be my daughter's and my future son-in-law's.
How cool is that?
Yeah, they bought a 10-acre property in Chester, and my daughter wants to put bees there. And she's going to be in my class.
That's really exciting.
I'm tickled pink. I really am.
You know, I think I mentioned to you, my son just moved out to Seattle, and he's joining Puget Sound Beekeepers Association. And I'm proud that he's
going to take this on.
Right?
So exciting, but I'm like, yay!
Yes. Yeah.
He doesn't
have any bees, but he's into it. And all my life, I always wanted him to have a little something. So I can feel your enthusiasm
for that.
Yeah,
I'm just
like
tickled pink. I can't wait. And the funny thing is, now my daughter was New Jersey State Honey Princess when she was 11.
Yeah.
And she had a little stint as Honey Queen when she was 14 or 15. So she's been in bees, and she's taken stings, and she's kind of a tough kid, you know. She's all right taking stings and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's marrying this wonderful, wonderful guy who really doesn't want to go anywhere near the bees.
He thinks you guys are nuts, right?
Yeah. Yes. But we're going to get him in bees, too. And I promised Sean, I said to him, Sean, I promise you, I'll put you in bees this spring and you won't get stung.
That's good.
You won't get
stung.
That's
the way to do it, right?
Yeah. So we have to get Sean excited
over the hill
about the bees, too. And then they can get farmland assessment and make honey. And that'll be the next apiary. But I've got about... I guess going into the winter, I think I counted 100, maybe 110 colonies of bees.
Yeah.
You know, it goes up and down. Anywhere
every year it waxes and wanes.
100 to somewhere 125, 100, you know, somewhere in there.
Montville?
Yeah, Montville.
New Jersey. That's in the northern
Morris
side,
County,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's about... maybe 15 minutes south of the New York State border. It's in the central part of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right off of 287, right?
Yes.
Where it crosses over the border.
Exactly.
Right now. I love that area. We go up sometimes to the Northeast meeting.
Yes.
And you get to go up through that part of the state. It's really neat. It's a great part of the state.
Yeah. Our area is maybe a little more rural than the Northeastern part. You know, Bergen County is a little more built up. So we still have plenty of woods and open fields and stuff, and that's where I put my bees.
Now, you're north of the 78 Route 80 parallel, so you've got bears all over the place.
We got tons of bears. Every single yard is in a really sturdy bear fence.
And they still get in? Or,
you know, I mean, there's solar fencers, and the solar fencers run on batteries.
Right.
And if I'm not diligent about replacing the batteries, one will go down, and as soon as the battery goes down, there's a bear in there.
Yeah,
so
I know you make a lot of products, and I've done a couple podcasts where we've made your lip balm. In fact, somebody stopped me today and told me how amazing my lip balm was, and I said, it's Landy's lip balm. So, and I was just saying to you that this morning... I just finished your cinnamon honey, and I need some more. So I'm looking for you to bring some of your products down there to Westchester when we come down to visit.
Oh, okay.
You bring me a jar, or I'll find you somewhere this year.
Yeah, Yeah, well, you have to come over for a visit.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
You can do that.
Listen,
right?
I will take you up on that. We'll come up and see your operation and talk about what you have going on, your honey house.
I thought I'll put you to work.
Yeah, I'm good with that, too. I'll bring a couple friends.
Yeah, Joe Trimal from Essex helps me keep bees, usually about once a week or once or twice a week. We'll go out together. So that just helps me get through more colonies. And I continue to work. It's not like I'm not working my bees when he's not there, but I get a little extra help when he's there. So we'll bring you out on a day when we're all working bees and going through doing alcohol washes or whatever it is that we're doing, whatever needs doing.
Yeah. I'm sure you have your routine down pat at this point, although every year is a different year, right?
Yeah, every year is different. That's what makes it so fascinating.
It is.
They're never exactly the same. Like last year, I don't think I ever saw a year with so much swarming. The conditions were just exactly right.
Yeah.
Warm early in the year with some early
great
nectar.
Great food right away.
The bees built up like crazy, and then all of a sudden there was a cold snap. They were confined. A lot of brood hatches out inside.
Yeah.
And then they can't get out very much. Now all of a sudden they're crowded. And I'm going to say 75-80% of our colony swarmed, in spite of perfect
management practices. Yes,
perfect management. Everything was reversed. You know,
I want to say the second year that I kept bees, I remember opening a box sometime in late March, early April, and every frame was just loaded with bees. And I haven't seen that except for last year.
Yeah.
Last year, it was just like that.
It was crazy. And then it came back to bite us in the butt later in the year, because all of those swarms that went out into the woods and built up and took mites with them, and the mites prospered on the bees, and none of those swarms got treated. And then at the end of the summer, as we're in dearth, with nothing coming in at all during a drought, those colonies are collapsing because of the mite load. And our managed bees are heading out into the woods to rob out those wild, infested colonies and coming back with honey and mites. At least that's what I think happened. You know, who knows for sure, but I think it's about as good a hypothesis as any. And then we had colonies absconding because of mite loads.
A lot of pressure.
And colonies that had been treated 2-3 times over the course of the year, dying of mites.
When you have all these yards all over the place, are they near other yards? Where I am, I don't know if you know this, at the end of my street, one of our beekeepers for the association is there. Mm-hmm. George Schaefer has his bees half miles at Crow Flies, if that.
Okay.
There's hives all around me. Do you have the same situation, or is it a mix?
No, there's a lot of hives around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some are closer together than others. The Dover yard, I don't know that there's anybody that close to them. But I'm going to say the rest of my yards are probably within half a mile
of
somebody else, me or someone else.
At least you're the big guy, so to speak.
Yeah,
right?
Actually I am.
And you're responsible, so that's good. You know, I remember I was having a conversation, you know, when you're here, we're at a New Jersey Beekeepers Association meeting today.
Yes, we are.
And I was chatting with Tim Schuler, and I had a conversation where I reminisced something you said about there was always this notion back in the day to treat once, and then you were surprised in a September-October review that you found mites. And I was telling Tim that last weekend we were at the Philly Beekeeper Symposium, and they were talking about how when a hive collapses, the mites are coming up on the bee and they're looking for a ride out of the sinking ship, right? And I hearkened back to your intellect of saying, I'm not sure what we're seeing here. That was 5-6 years ago at least, right? And now it's pretty well known.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a really... I mean, I had a problem with one yard in a particular area that I knew was near a beekeeper who did not treat.
Yeah.
And I never had success in that yard. I always had problems, and I always had huge winter losses in that yard. And I'm pretty sure it's because my bees went and got
Yeah, that's pretty
food
frustrating.
And came back with stuff they should.
Yeah, there's
have
nothing
come
back
you with.
Could do. The speaker from Minnesota was showing a picture of the city, saying this hive that's on the farthest side of the city is impacted by the other ones because they're all within flight distance of each other and they're all incestuous. So this might be a city where there's tons of hives, but it's one great big apiary. That's the way she was recollecting it.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, there's a Facebook group that I belong to, Women in Beekeeping.
Yeah.
And there was a recent conversation on, I don't know what you call them, what is it, a chat or a...
Thread.
A post or... Right, yeah. Thread, there you go. Of a woman who is building, like, straw skeps. Beautiful thing.
I saw that.
Gorgeous.
I saw that.
Okay.
I know who you're talking about.
But a lot of beekeepers were commenting, these are illegal in our state.
Yeah.
And illegal in a lot of places. And she was saying, well, you know, I can examine my bees and I can treat them if they need treating. And I believe that the bees can do just fine on their own. You know, I trust the bees and they know what to do. And I kind of used to be there many years ago, but many bee deaths later.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tim will tell you, I mean, I was a die-hard IPM gal, and I really did not want to put pesticides in my bees. And you know what, Kevin? None of us want to put pesticides in our hives.
Struggle
none of us
with that
do.
All the time.
But I want to keep my bees alive. And of course, you know, those hives are illegal because you cannot readily examine them.
Right.
You can't, you know, you have to cut the comb out to examine them. And how are you going to treat it? And
that wasn't the sun hive, was it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
is
it was
that
a
what
sun,
it is?
That's exactly
yeah,
what it was.
That's a popular movement in the California area.
I'm from California. Did you know that?
No.
I grew up in San Francisco.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. How'd you end up in New Jersey?
I went to school at Columbia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
That's up in your neck
I
of the
came
woods.
I came east when I was 19. I've actually been on the East Coast since I was 19 years old.
How about that?
Yeah, and I loved it. After I graduated from Columbia, I came to New Jersey because I really didn't want to be in a city. I grew up in a city. I was never meant to be a city girl.
No, me either.
Never meant to. Even when I was a little girl, I found like this one little tiny patch of earth in along the side of the concrete in the driveway behind our apartment building. And I planted, somebody gave me some iris bulbs and I planted those there. And it was wonderful because they bloomed. And
I go to the city and I can't wait to come home.
Yeah, me
too. It just is an assault on my senses. It's like being packed in this room in here.
Yeah, yeah, me too. In the morning, I go out on our back porch, no, even down to 20 degrees, and I'll wrap up in blankets, and I take my tea with my milk and honey out there, and I sit out there, and I watch the world come alive. You know, the birds start to sing, and then I hear the traffic on 287, and the sun comes up. I actually watch the sun come up, and it's like it just starts my day off right.
I agree with you.
And then the dog and I hike up the mountain and I lose my cell phone.
Oh. So, you know, I know you were pretty active and still remain active in Essex County beekeepers. You teach their training courses and things, but you seem to have emerged even more. Everybody knows you from EAS and the Master Beekeepers, and you were featured in American Bee Journal not too long ago.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
I was telling you before we started recording this that I don't subscribe to those things because I don't want to be skewed by other people's notions, but I bought a subscription to read your article on that, and that was neat. It was people had reminded us that Bob Hughes was in there from New Jersey, but you don't see New Jersey featured that much, so good for you. That was cool.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun, and I thought that she did a really wonderful job on it. It was a long article.
Which issue was that?
January of last year?
Yeah.
I think
it was a long article. I thought that was really cool. They gave you a lot of latitude to cover a lot of ground. That was really neat.
Yeah, she was... She was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you've been the topic of newspaper articles and had reporters, you know, always talking to you and writing
things
about
you. Yeah, for Northwest
you.
When I was involved.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
And they always get something wrong, right?
Yes, yeah.
They always get something wrong. I mean, over the years, I've been the subject of probably dozens of newspaper articles. And even been on TV once or twice. And this was the only time ever that she got everything right.
Wow,
there weren't
that's
any
great.
Mistakes in there.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was neat. Yeah. I felt like I know a celebrity.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah. I was kind of blown away by that. I don't feel like a celebrity. Not at all.
So you're speaking March 11th?
Yeah, at the Westchester.
Dewey Caron.
Dewey and I are getting to speak together, and yeah. Megan Gilbraith and yeah. Phil Kraft.
Megan spoke last week in Philadelphia. She was great.
Was she?
Actually recorded the podcast for this week. You have to think chronological order when this comes out. This comes out next week.
Okay.
And I release my next version on Sunday. And I said, you had me at hello for Megan, right? Because her talk was great in Philly. I'd never seen her before, didn't know her. I know she's obviously pretty popular, but I'm a Luddite sometimes as to who some of these people are. I know who Dewey is, of course. I know who Phil Kraft is. Sam, that's going to be here tonight, spoke last week. He was great, too.
He was great. That's exciting. Yeah. I haven't heard him
met
speak,
him?
And I haven't heard Megan either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've known Dewey for forever.
Yeah, you and Dewey are like... Jeff, I guess,
go
right?
Go back a really long
for
time.
EAS.
Yeah.
He is Mr. EAS.
He is
they
Mr.
talk
EAS,
about him like
and he's our academic advisor for the Master Beekeepers.
Energizer Bunny.
Yeah, and I knew him years and years ago when he was in Delaware. We invited him to come up and speak at Essex.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And he was, you know, he was just he's just a great person. Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, you're a bit connected. You went down recently and spoke with Billy, right? In Virginia?
Yes, yes.
That's
that
a lot of fun,
in November.
Huh? Yeah. What did you guys talk about? Were you doing nukes?
We were, Billy was talking about the Sustainable Honeybee Project.
Yeah.
And I gave several talks. I gave the one on reading the frames, which I had done at EAS, which... my friend, another, you know, beekeeping friend, who happens also to be my accountant.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Small world, right?
Invited me, and I was staying with him and his wife. But he loved that talk, so he wanted to share it with some of the northern Virginia beekeepers.
How cool is that to be, like, they want me to come to Virginia?
I know.
Isn't that kind of neat?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of cool.
It's different when you're at AES because you're just in a sea of beekeepers and this is what happens there. But when they call you down special to come see people that have never heard of you, that's kind of cool.
It's always fun. I went to Arkansas, too,
a few
years ago. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Jeremy, you know.
Oh, Bemis that we saw today.
Bemis, here, was in the audience
He's
when
amazing.
I was speaking
Holy
in Arkansas.
Holy cow. I was like, phew.
That was incredible, right?
Yeah.
I wish I had a 10,000 square foot X... airplane
what
hangar.
Jim 2 walked over and said something to me and said, you know, and then Grant came over and said something about what a perfect situation he had.
He had the land.
And he had the perfect
facility
had the building, to do this.
And he had the need, too, because there were so few classes and supply houses in his area.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And boy, he felt it. So for those on the podcast... Jeremy Bemis was one of the featured speakers today. He came from Arkansas to New Jersey, and he talked about his beekeeping operation. He started out as a tree guy, and now he's doing beekeeping, and he went whole hog. He's got bees, he's got store, he's got tours, he's got, it's an amazing little industry.
Yeah, agritourism, and he still does trees.
And he does trees still. Yeah.
And makes woodenware and
tomorrow he's going to talk about beekeeping in the South, which is going to be neat to hear.
Yeah, lots of small hive beetles down there.
Yeah.
When I spoke with those beekeepers, I was, you know, kind of coming obviously from a northern perspective. I've never kept bees in the South. And they kept asking, well, what do you do about small hive beetles?
I get that from my listeners, too. The ones south of Maryland, they always ask, what do you do? And when I made a comment, Roger Gares, you know him from Northwest?
Yes.
Yeah, Roger found something on the web and posted to the forum where you use terry cloth or what is the stuff you use to clean your windows
right.
and whatever
yeah.
that catches the bees,
exactly.
But it has to be a specific
it's
kind.
A
and
microfiber
he's been on the
yeah
microfiber
thing, yeah.
cloth. He's yeah. been on the quest for the right brand,
exactly the right
to
kind.
Do that.
And we don't have them.
Yeah,
I mean
we don't.
I mean,
one
we have
one
small
year,
hive beetle,
one
but
year
they're
we
never
had a little
an issue.
Smidge, right.
You know, I see them every once in a while. You know, I'll see them yeah. on the inner covers. If I see more than half a dozen, I'm like, wow, look at all those small hive beetle. But down there,
yeah.
half a dozen is nothing. I mean, they have small hive beetle actually take down strong colonies.
That's pretty crazy.
Which I think is insane. That's nuts.
And
glad
you know,
north.
I've seen all those beetle traps and things, front entrance.
Yeah, Peter, I sold Peter a bunch
Thiel.
Of them at the auction.
Yeah.
that I bought
yeah,
never
you know,
used.
Yeah. There was a guy, he's not with us anymore, but Peter Thiel invented this thing that I thought was really cool. I'll have to dig that out and show that to you. But he discovered that if you grind up beetles and put it out, they yeah. won't go in that area. And they were going to commercialize the product, and I guess that never came to fruition. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
If you sprinkle dead beetles in the hive, I would think that the bees would just clean it up.
Well, what they found is that there was some sort of extract in the dead beetles, and they took a plate and they put it on the half of the plate and they dumped the beetles on, and the beetles ran over to the other side. They would not stay on the side where they put the ground up beetle extract on. And so
cool.
they did all these experiments with it, and every single time it repelled the beetles out.
It's like
so
poltergeist.
Yes. Yeah.
Remember that scene at the end
yes.
in the cemetery?
Right.
And the, yeah, all the bodies coming up and, yeah.
Yeah, so they were going to commercialize that, he and somebody else, and I guess that never came to fruition. But, you know, I remember the beetle blaster trap and some of those other
yeah.
things. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we keep talking about someday we might head down to Darlington, South Carolina, the Sand Hills, which is the perfect place for these
for
things.
Beetles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm not going down there.
Oh.
My husband keeps trying to talk me into retiring down to Florida.
You're good where you're at, huh?
I like it here.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere. I want to drop dead in the back of a 65-acre...
On Hog Mountain?
Yeah. Goldenrod yard
coming up
somewhere.
Yeah. That
you know, of
good.
A heart attack when I'm in my hundreds yeah. sometime, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
I'll be done. Whoa.
State Trooper
Silence.
Rolling through. We're right along Route 206 here.
Look at that sunset. That's pretty.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know what? It's getting a little
Are
cool
in
here, and we're supposed to go back. So,
let's
Landy.
Call it a day.
I know you were nervous. You were like, I never did this, but this was fun, wasn't it? Wasn't that hard?
Oh, I had a blast.
Yeah. Well, look, don't be a stranger. I grab Tim every once in a while, and I just see what he's up to. And I would love to take you up on your offer. I'll come up and visit you. We'll spend
yeah,
a day,
come on
record
out.
A couple
we'll get
things.
Get you some more cinnamon honey.
That's, I'm telling you, folks.
Come check out the
Do you
bees.
Sell that stuff on the web?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, we got goosewalkfarm.com.
Okay, Goose Rock. I'm telling you, the cinnamon honey is amazing. What's the type of cinnamon you use in it?
It's Corinchy. Cinnamon.
It's got just enough, it's like it really zings you.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's amazing.
It's good stuff.
All right, Landy, thank
All right.
you.
Thanks, Kevin. Let's go back to the meeting.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun to talk to Landy. I wanted to say, I think somewhere in there I said the name of her business, and I'm not sure that I said it very well. It's Goose Rock Farms, in case it didn't come out properly. It's always fun to run into Landy. Just love that she's a very practical person. Everything she does makes a lot of sense. And she has an engineering background, so a lot of what Landy does is well thought through. And just like her style of beekeeping, and whenever Landy talks about what she's doing and how she's doing it, I'm paying attention and really do appreciate the fact that she spends a lot of time educating beekeepers and sharing. So really appreciated having the ability to sit down and talk with her, and we're going to have to just make sure we do all we can to keep in touch with her. you want to learn more about Landy, you can visit her website, grooserockfarm.com. One of the things I know about Landy is she used to, and probably still does on the side, raise queens and raise nukes, but I think she's focused more now on her honey and products of the hive operation. But again, you want to know what's going on, you could check her out and follow what she has going on at grooserockfarm.com. For segment number two, we're going to hear from another New Jersey beekeeper, John Gott. I was able to circle back with John at the same meeting as the one with Landy that you just heard a moment ago. John, if you've been with us for a while, was featured in episode 72, and we spoke of his method for insulating hives in segment number one of that show. John's a very detailed Jersey beekeeper who I've admired also for a long time, again for his approach to beekeeping and the great way that he shares out with others. It seems ironic to me, as I think of it, that John, geographically, happens to be in the same part of the state as Landy. Without any further introduction, here's the recording of our conversation.
For this segment, I wanted to take the time to welcome John Gott back to the program.
Good to see you again, Kevin. It's good being here at the state meeting this weekend.
Yeah, we're catching up here at the New Jersey Beekeepers Association meeting. So, episode 72, that's a lot of episodes ago. It's been a while, and you and I crossed paths, but we never get a chance to sit down and talk. So, you were, in our circles, known as the insulation guy. You were one of the first guys to do a lot of insulation work in New Jersey, and you're still at that?
Yeah, still. And I give quite a few presentations to the various branches in New Jersey about overall winterization, and also delivered the presentation at EAS this year, talking about what the bees need to successfully overwinter. And for me, a big part of that is insulating the hive. Usually use about 2 inches of extruded polystyrene on the top of the hive and 2 inches around all four sides. And I've really found that the top insulation, big benefit all winter long, because it helps retain the heat in the hive, but also prevents condensation on the top of the hive. Yeah. That condensation oftentimes in our area freezes, and then it gets warm and it rains down on the bees, and that's really what kills the colony. The top insulation prevents that from happening. The side insulation is beneficial during the winter, too, because it helps prevent wind infiltration, and that does also slow down a temperature fluctuation within the hive. It doesn't cool down as quickly. In the spring, it's a big benefit because the brood nest can expand. It's the middle of February here now, and a lot of the hives, if you take the insulation off the side and put your hand against it, it feels warm, just like putting your hand against your chest inside your coat. Again, the bees are trying to keep that brood nest warm. And I've got a FLIR camera now, so it's very interesting. On a cold, clear morning with no wind, you can go out, you can take a look at the hives with the insulation on, and they're pretty much the outside air temperature. You take that insulation off, and with a little temperature spotter, you can see that it's 80 degrees or so on the side of that wooden hive, on the outside of the wood. If that insulation wasn't there, the bees would have to work a lot harder to keep that hive warm. In the process, they'd be using a lot more honey to do it. So I find that the bees do not need as much honey in the winter. Having said that, I still give them plenty, but they just don't go through the stores like they would if the hive wasn't insulated. I think it also helps the brood nest expand quicker in the spring, so you have a larger population. That's really the reason I started doing it to begin with, is so that...
And when they're ready to go, they're going to be...
Yeah, they've got a good, strong population.
Take advantage of what's coming. Do you think that insulation is the sweet spot? Do you think about the cambium of a tree and when they're in there, how much insulation they get from the actual trunk of a tree?
Yeah, it's very similar to that. And I actually have a tree with some bees in it. And like there's a small core section. It's about 6 to 8 inches diameter that the bees are in, and then there's every bit of another 6 to 8 inches all the way around that. So there, that's an ideal location for them. And the insulation essentially does the same thing. With 2 inches of insulation, that's equivalent to 10 inches of wood in the tree.
Yeah. So you mentioned you have FLIR cameras, but we just covered, Bob Gloss and I both have them too, and we covered when you have insulated hives, you can't see unless, again, you're taking it off. But you have a new tool in your arsenal. You're running broodminders in your operation.
Yeah. I got the first broodminder this past summer at DAS and installed it in August. And then I went to Galveston for the ABF convention and bought another broodminder there and installed it. And I really like them. On a cold January day, I can sit in the pickup truck and download the data while I'm sitting inside the hive. Then come back and take a look at it. It really does give you X-ray vision into the hive. You can see what's going on. And it's pretty interesting this time of year why you can see the temperatures slowly coming up as the cluster and the brood gets closer to the temperature sensors. The scales on the bottom of the hive, very handy to have. I manually weigh my hives. It's pretty quick and easy the way I do it, but having the scale there collecting data every twice an hour, I think, is what the data rate is. Very interesting. I put the broodminder on one hive in each of two apiaries, and that gives me an idea of what the rest of the hives are doing in those apiaries. Then, if I see them diminishing in weight this time of year, then I know to look at the other hives a lot closer as well.
You told me you were running 25 hives and a bunch of nukes. How many nukes do you have running?
25 production hives and about 24 nukes. And those nukes are 5-frame nukes, double deeps, though. And, of course, I insulate those. I bundle four of
them together. Do you have them stacked together?
Yeah, bundled together in fours.
Little nuke condos, that's what we call them.
Yeah. My wife came up with the same term. She saw what I was doing and said, "You don't have beehives, you have bee condominiums."
Yeah.
That works well, bundling them together. Early spring, I'll start separating them out. The reason I overwinter a lot of the nukes, the raised queens, so those are fall queens in there. I'll probably put some of those queens in some of the production colonies in the spring that need them. And the other main reason I have the nukes is I'll pull frames of brood out of those nukes to start using in mating nukes then for more queen production.
Are you looking to go bigger on your operation or just the same?
I'm trying to not go bigger.
Yeah, it gets to be some insanity, doesn't it?
But, you know, this last year I increased quite a bit because, as some people say, it was Swarmageddon around us.
Yeah.
I think I caught 16 swarms altogether.
We didn't see that down by us.
It was amazing. I had some colonies that swarmed four times and then still produced a honey crop.
How did you make out on honey last year?
It was a fantastic season. It's kind of funny because in the beginning of the season, the black locusts around us really didn't produce anything. No blossoms to speak of, no honey flow. So I thought it was going to be a flop. And at the same time, the bees were swarming like crazy. And I said to myself and others, well, maybe the bees know something we don't, because it wasn't obvious to anybody. As it turned out, the bees did seem like they knew something. There was a tremendous nectar flow, so the honey crop was big. And so I enjoyed a large honey crop this year. Fortunately, so
it was wet by us until I want to say June, July, and then it got really, really dry. For the listeners, you're in Mahwah, New Jersey, which is about as far north as you can get.
Correct. Yeah, and another 6 miles north, and you're into New York State. But it's still more. It's about a 500-foot elevation where I am. You go a little bit more west.
That's pretty high, actually, as I think about
north and west. It even gets higher then. So I'm at kind of the base of the Ramapo Mountains.
Okay. And, you know, what I always see in New Jersey is the weather comes in right about across Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and it either splits, it goes south down through Mercer and south, or it goes north of 78 up through you guys.
Yeah.
You have snow right now?
We got about 8 inches of snow, but it's diminishing pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the sun's out, so it disappears pretty quickly this time of year.
So you're seeing activity in your hives already?
Yeah. Earlier this week, it actually got up close to 60 degrees by us just for one day. And then, of course, it snowed 8 inches the next day, right? But that day when it was warm, I was in most of my hives. I'm starting to treat for mites right now. I'm pretty aggressive in mite treatment. I use Apivar right now, so I have Apivar in all the hives. And it's been in for a few weeks, so I go in and just look to make sure the strips are where they need to be. And not a lot of brood in the hives.
Are you doing it just as a safety check, or what were you monitoring?
Well, I know there's mites in the hive, and it's I have IPM boards on most of my hives, not all.
Yeah.
And so before I put the Apivar in, I really wasn't seeing much of a mite drop at all. But a couple weeks after starting to put the Apivar in, I was seeing the mite drop. I do alcohol wash, and but it's just too cold to do that now.
Yeah, right now.
I don't know,
Megan Milbraith, I saw her recently, and she said people are, some of them are in New Jersey cracking their hives open and doing it, and she loves that idea.
Yeah.
She was excited to say it's okay to do it right now, which I thought was an interesting notion.
I've been doing it for a few years now. The idea is that you've got a relatively small population of bees. Most of the mites are in the phoretic
stage.
Not a
lot of brood, yep.
And you don't need necessarily to have four strips in the colony. If it's a large colony, yes, but oftentimes two or three strips is really all you need. So it's a little more cost effective.
Yeah.
But also you're really getting rid of the mites while, as you say, they're broodless. Because once the brood rearing starts, the mites are in there, and then they're very hard to treat. And the population increases pretty rapidly.
Certainly you can get ahead of the curve on that, you know, growth curve of mites through the year if you started early that way. You were mentioning to me a new approach that you were considering, glycerin oxalic acid. Tell me about that.
Right. So Randy Oliver had a recent article in the January issue of American Bee Journal about his experiments with using glycerin as a carrier for the oxalic acid in the hive. And this is something that I guess has been done in Europe and Latin America for a few years, but they were using it pretty much on a cardboard strip. He used a shop towel for it, and
one of those red shop towels that you find in the garage?
No,
or?
The blue paper towel. Blue paper towel. I've got an experiment going on with a few of my nukes right now where I'm comparing Apivar with the glycerin-soaked and oxalic acid.
So
towels.
Tell me how the... We can go to Randy's website, I'm assuming, but just give me a... I don't know about this. So how do you make the formulation that you put on the towel?
So generally, you want about, I think it's 25 grams, but I need to verify that.
Don't do this, folks. Go look it up.
But you basically mix a one-to-one oxalic acid with the glycerin and soak that into a towel. And in the article, Randy put twice as much solution on the towel as he needed and then squeezed half of it back out.
Okay.
But since then, he found better ways to do that.
This is similar to that when he was in New Jersey, he was talking about wood bleach, right? The wood bleach dribble method, but this is not dribbling it in the hives, but delivering it through a piece of cloth.
Right. So with a dribble, it's pretty much a one-time treatment. It's effective for maybe a day or two after you put this dribble in. With the oxalic acid and glycerin solution, then you have an extended treatment period. And maybe almost as long as the Apivar. So that's why I'm doing the comparison.
And how do you apply it? Right on top of the boxes or in between the brood boxes? Or
Usually I have mine on top of the, wherever the bees are on top of that box.
Do you have to close a hive up or you're not worried about that?
No, it stays
A slow release?
It stays in there for, I'll say, 6 weeks, order of magnitude.
Any temperature or century?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see how well it works. It's, I consider it very experimental right now.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, I know what, there's so much out there about this vaporization thing where you heat it and the dangers to beekeepers. The other side of it is the way that it works, from what I heard last week, is that it actually burns the hair off the mites. That's how the acid burns the mites, and then the mites become blind and they can't find their way around inside. But it's not so caustic enough to impact the bee's normal operation.
Right. That's the vaporization approach. And I don't use it because I you know, for my own safety, I don't use it, even with the respirator and eye protection.
So in this case, is the mechanism of action the same way? It's still vaporing out, or are they coming in contact with it?
If you go back to Randy Oliver's article in the American Bee Journal, there he's referencing that Dennis Van Ingelsdorf thinks that the oxalic acid is actually absorbed in the pads on the mites' feet. That might be the mechanism. But I'm not sure anybody really knows the mechanism of why oxalic acid knocks down the mites.
They were saying that one of the Achilles' heel of a mite is the pad, which has this gluey substance.
Correct.
And if you could wreck that substance, you completely disable the mite. And they were looking at that as an angle to try and get to the mite. So that's interesting. Well, John, I really appreciate you taking the time to stop by. It's been a while since we caught up, and we have to stay in touch.
I'm anxious to get some results back on the oxalic acid and glycerin, and I'll share those results.
Yeah, appreciate it. When you have some experience, come on back. Tell us how you made out.
Good. Okay. Good talking with you, Kevin. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Like I said, and as it shows from the conversation with him, John's a pretty industrious guy, and always interested to see what he's doing. He's pretty progressive, following through on things. It's funny how you know some folks and you try to always catch up with them. When you're at meetings, there's so little time to network. So, you know, a few people I try to seek out, and if I get the chance, I always try to circle back with John and see what he's up to. So as time goes on, we'll keep trying to see if we could check in on him and see how he's doing. I appreciate that Landy and John took the time to talk to us, and hope you enjoyed the conversations with them. Let's go ahead and switch to the back of the book. Let's go to our roundtable segments. First one, I want to talk about BK Corner YouTube. I wanted to share something new for the Beekeeper's Corner. You may or may not have seen a post on our website that indicates that I'm going to change the way that I'm running the website, and I'm actually going to start blogging or posting information about beekeeping. I think it's a natural forum for the podcast to take some of the stories that we do and expand on them. And there's other things that don't make it into the show that I can post information. In between all of the things I have going on, I have managed to post a couple things. And on numerous occasions, I've referred listeners to our Northwest Beekeepers Association YouTube channel on the podcast, as I'm the administrator of the channel and often post a litany of features that we do here for the podcast and for the Beekeepers Association there. I'll continue to serve in that role as the administrator, but what I do for the podcast might be in conflict of interest or simply a little odd in execution in some respects if I'm going to start blogging. For example, recently I sat down and interviewed Rich Morris from Broodminder for this podcast. And just yesterday, I caught up with Joe Lewis and filmed our conversations using video camera. These interviews are for the podcast, and I'm recording them to share on my blog, and I'm introducing myself as Kevin from BK Corner for the audio that I might pull and play in some of the podcast segments or when you go to look at the video. And it seems a little odd when posting them over on the Northwest channel because they're not, hey, I'm Kevin from Northwest New Jersey. There might also come a day when I will benefit monetarily from this effort, and it could lead to a bit of a conflict of interest as the videos could be considered promotions for profit if I'm making some money doing this, which I'm not doing so far, but I don't say I don't leave the opportunity open. And if it does happen, I don't want anything goofy going on there. So I've been thinking for a number of months now about separating the podcast information out, and recently started, like I said, blogging on the site, and figured it would make sense to start a BK Corner YouTube channel. So I have a favor to ask of the listeners. I'd like to ask you, if you are willing, of course, to visit the YouTube page and subscribe. YouTube will allow you to have a dedicated URL for the channel. As it is, when you start a new URL or a new channel on YouTube, you get this gobbledygook of a title. And I can't go on the podcast and say, go to youtube.com/BK Corner. The thing that has to happen is I need 100 or more subscribers, and then I can get a dedicated URL. So your mission, if you choose to accept, is visit the show notes for this episode, episode 106, and click on the link that I provide to the YouTube channel. And if you would subscribe, I would greatly appreciate it. So go to bkcorner.org and look for the show notes for 106 and click on the link to go over to the YouTube channel. I give it to you, but it's not even decipherable, audible way. So I really appreciate that. And other thing that you'll see, as an example, is that Rich Morris interview is featured on the blog. And if you click on that, you'll be able to watch the video and you'll be at the channel and you can click subscribe there. So you get a double bonus. Go see what Rich Morris from Broodminder had to say in our little sit down and click on the subscribe while you're there. I'd really appreciate it. So for those who love the Northwest Channel, fear not. I still have plenty of videos. I'll be posting them up there. I'm going to have a conversation with the leadership board there about co-branding some things and seeing what they say and just asking what their opinion is. I'm going to be proactive about this possible conflict of interest and make sure that they're comfortable with the direction we go in. So you could still go to youtube.com/NWNJBA. And in fact, I just posted a new video there today, too, so you can go check that out. It was the video of the endoscope bees that Bob Kloss and I did for one of our presentations. I put that together and finally got it posted up there. Roundtable number 2, fermented honey garlic. I saw this on Facebook somewhere. Somebody shared it. There was a video made by Bon Appetit. The magazine had how to make fermented garlic honey with Brad. And it's really a cool video. Even if you don't care for fermented garlic honey, which I don't even know if I'd like it, just the way they produced the video, and it was tongue-in-cheek, funny, there's goofy things in it. You may or may not like it, I don't know. But kudos to them, and actually it looked like a cool recipe and something to try this summer. I'm not sure, but I think I might try it just to see what it tastes like. And I always like the idea of fermenting and doing things like that. So why not check that out? It's pretty cool. We'll have a link to that in our show notes. How to make fermented garlic honey with Brad. I tell you a URL for that, but like I just said, some of these URLs from YouTube are just hideous. XLVXVQ8. Something, 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 something. No. Go check our show notes out and you'll see it there. Roundtable number 3, Busby disappears. I know sometimes corporations get a bad rap for different things they do, where they're self-promoting or doing whatever, but I don't know. Just something about this I thought was kind of cool. Honey Nut Cheerios is running a promotion where they show a box and their mascot, Busby, is not on the front of the box to highlight endangered pollinators. Did you know that the most popular cereal in the United States is Honey Nut Cheerios, and I think by a landslide? That's interesting. So General Mills brand is encouraging people to plant wildflowers through this promotion, and if they do this, I think they offer free seeds, then Busby will come back. I think it's a win-win, honestly, because people are going to eat this cereal anyway, and hopefully it's good could look, there's one thing I know is that bees need good nutrition. And if somebody like General Mills, who sells millions of boxes of cereal, can get people to plant pollinator flowers, what's not to love, corporation or not? So go get yourself some Honey Nut Cheerios, get yourself some wildflower seeds, and cheers to General Mills. Good for them. If you want to learn more about the promotion, go to Cheerios.com/bringbackthebees. It's #bringbackthebees on Twitter, I'm assuming. And there you can click on a form to get free seats. And, you know what, spend a few minutes, scroll through and see what they're talking about. Nicely done. Really nicely done page that gives some information about how important pollinators are and so on. And what they're doing to do their part. So check that out. And again, like I said, kudos to them. Really enjoy this promotion. You know, that reminds me, I sent away for those free seeds a couple episodes back. Never got them. Wondered what happened to that. Wonder if anybody else filled it out and got those seeds. I'll have to look back into that. Roundtable number 4, I wanted to talk about some hive designs. Lately, I've been coming across a bunch of different things. I mentioned in a recent episode about Slovenian beehives. They were the ones that were similar to a kitchen cabinet and the things slide out. They were pretty cool. And I've seen a bunch of pictures of those recently. And they're the ones that I said were in the video More Than Honey. Well, recently I've seen a new hex hive design. If you go to hexhive.com, you'll see them. But actually, what I wanted to talk about was this video that I saw on YouTube. Hexagon hive built for cold climate / holistic. And it's this guy. He looks like some guy, typical Midwestern farmer kind of guy. He's wearing jeans and a ball cap and a, you know, long sleeve flannel shirt. And he built this hive out of really thick material. And it's a cool design. I really like it. The hex hive looked like somebody's commercial version of a hex hive. And the point of this is it's the dimension of a tree trunk, and it's in the shape of a tree trunk. But his is made out of probably 1.5 or 2 inch lumber. And he has, if you could picture where two sides come to a point, at the base of the two sides, he puts a bar in, or a piece of wood that attaches the two that makes the triangle shape. So one part of the hive, the flat part, is straight, and then there's two triangles to the right and left, and that makes the hex shape. And in the triangle, he fills it with insulation. And to me, I'm thinking, boy, this is a really good idea for a hex hive, the way he has it designed. So I told you I hate the way YouTube does their channels, but on this one, I'll give you the URL and I'll also post it up on our thing. You could look at it. It's youtu.be for YouTube / L1LHXVBCBPO. Yeah. Now, just go to YouTube and search for Hexagon Hive built for cold climate / holistic. And the guy who put it out there is Bees for Life, B-E-E-Z 4, the number 4, life.com. And his handle on YouTube is You Ride for Life. The letter U, R-I-D-E, for life. Again, sorry, everybody. Just go to the show notes and click on it if you didn't want to try and capture all that. Had one other hive design. This is the Cathedral Hive. Been hearing a lot about this. Somebody introduced this to me last year. The idea of the Cathedral Hive is it's that same hive, but laying down. And the point of it is The cathedral hive has three sides, a top and two sides. I think I've talked about this. And the comb is built down from that. And they don't build comb along the bottom. And it has this tube in the top where the bees could walk through. And so I'm starting to see, maybe it's just me, more and more people, especially in a holistic, natural, treatment-free space, looking at these alternative hive methods and not going after the Langstroth box, which I'm finding kind of fascinating. So to that point, I was listening to a podcast where people were talking about the Layens hive, L-A-Y-E-N-S. It's a special hive that I think originated out of Russia. It's like a Langstroth hive, but instead the frames are really long and deep. And yesterday at the Chester County Beekeepers Association, there was a gentleman there. His name was Manny. And he had a hive that had these really deep frames. And I shot a bunch of pictures of him and shot a little video where he introduced me to the hive. And I'm going to post a feature on that on the YouTube channel, the BK Corner one. And I'll write a little blog post on it. But I'm fascinated in that hive form factor. And one of the things that you hear is that you have a longer frame, which has more dimension of comb, which means more bees can live in a single space without the interruption. And it is possible that if you have a chamber with longer comb, more bees on the face, they could build a better cluster to overwinter, but you can make a smaller hive. So the hive is taller, it's a little bit wider, it's not too deep, but it's basketball-sized cluster in the middle of it, and they're all on contiguous frame. So what do you think? That's an interesting idea, and it's very similar to the Layens hive design. So you hear the conversation, I have something in the queue from Tom Seeley. There was a research article that's coming up in my queue, How Honeybee Colonies Survive in the Wild, Testing the Importance of Small Nests and Frequent Swarming. It was a really good episode put out by Aaron Jennings, Bees and Such podcast, where he talked to some folks who talk about frequent swarming and smaller nests and so on. And I really enjoyed that episode. And, you know, again, just starting to think of all the alternatives in the future. And I'm going to get to this Tom Seeley article and see if I can learn a little more about it, and what I do, I'll bring back to you. So yeah, a lot of neat little hive ideas out there. If you're interested, look around. There's always stuff to find about people tinkering with different hive ideas. But I really like that hexagon hive that guy came up with. I'm interested in considering building something like that. Could that be the one hive that is the one to do? Very interesting. Roundtable number 5, I wanted to talk about Stinging Insects 101. This came from pestworld.org. How to identify the pest, the nest, and the threat. I posted a new feature to the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association homepage this past week. We consistently are receiving requests for a couple different things, and I thought it was about time to put that out on our website to address the public side of what goes on in our talks with people who we meet in public outreach. One of the first things is we sell honey at our fairs, and people are always, when they run out of honey, calling the number on the label asking where they can pick up honey. A lot of people who call and have visited us at the fairs aren't from our local region. They come from all over the state to come to these county fairs. So we built a honey locator on the homepage. And it tells you who our local beekeepers are. It tells you where to go in New Jersey for the New Jersey Beekeepers Association to look for people who sell. And then, of course, you can go to honey.com and look at their locator. So that's a resource for the public. The other thing we get requests for, and I don't know about you if you're part of a beekeepers association, is people want bees on their property, but they don't want to keep bees. So we built a new facility to have hive placement requests where people can fill out a form, tell us what they're doing, and we'll post it, and we'll try and play matchmaker to beekeepers and hive placements. We frequently get asked questions about swarm capture and bee removals. I see this thing. What can we do about it? If you come to our homepage, we never had anything to send you where to go. So now we have a complete guide on swarm capture and bee removals and how to find a resource. And the other thing that ties to that is a bee insect identification. So this one, the pest, the nest, and the threat is where this comes in. If you go to our homepage, which is nwba.njbeekeepers.org, and you look at the honeybee identification, it shows you what a honeybee is, and it shows you common insects that you'll encounter in New Jersey, what they are, what kind of nests they have, what they look like, what their threat is. You know, we compare and contrast a honeybee to a yellow jacket, a bumblebee, a bald-faced hornet, red paper wasp. We talk about the difference between a bumblebee and a carpenter bee. And then we also show people, because they encounter them when the cicadas are out, the cicada killer wasp and the European hornets. And one of my favorites, and we have these on our garage every year, is the mud dauber wasp. Have you ever seen these? They build something that looks like a flute, but it's made out of wood. And there's a bunch of different tubes out of wood, glued to the side of the wall, and these wasps are in there, and they're in right in the breezeway where we walk through every day, and they never bother us. And I always thought they were really cool. And one of the things I learned in the research here is they're really good at taking care of excess spiders. So this website, pestworld.org, is where I got this stinging 101 information, where I sourced some data about the different nests and threats and so on. And at the bottom of that page, I put some honeybee insights, the benefit of honeybees, honeybee swarms information. And I think it's a good resource for the public. There's one other feature I wanted to add to this. I'll add it at some point. And it's just the basics of a hive. We get a lot of educators or people who learn about us and are interested, and they just want to know what goes on in a hive. Do bees overwinter? And having those resources available for people. So that's another feature. At some point I'll add to that section, but if you go to the homepage, you'll see these new resources. And I enjoyed doing that. It was a lot of work, but I think it came out pretty well. Roundtable number 6. I wanted to talk about oxalic. I can't avoid this topic anymore. It's been something that has just been a buzz. Couldn't avoid it. Man, everybody is on this oxalic bandwagon, and I have my thoughts about it, which I thought I'd share. One, it's not legal in New Jersey yet, so I know a lot of people are going to go down this route in 2017. I'll caution them that they really should make sure they keep themselves out of trouble. As I'm learning, there's multiple ways to do it. Randy Oliver talked when he was here about doing the drip method. I know he's working on something else where you drip it on shop towels. John Gott alluded to that in his segment. And of course, there's a lot of folks out there doing oxalic through vaporization. And I'm hearing people say, you don't need a mask and all that other stuff. But I know a lot of people who know chemicals and are OSHA-like and whatever. And they're like, look, there's some things you don't have to fuss over. But this thing, this is pretty serious. I know people talked about Mitaway quick strips and you should wear a mask. And I know tons of beekeepers, for whatever reason, they apply that stuff and they're not doing it at their own peril, I suppose. But then I've not heard of anybody who went to the hospital because they were doing Mitaway quick strips. But this stuff, I don't know. I don't have any practical experience. So what I'm going to do is, since I am somebody who conveys information to others in beekeeping and I'm getting some questions about this, I'm going to go start doing the research and talk about the methods of application and so on. I'm going to go look at what Randy Oliver is doing and what some others are doing. And maybe at some point I'll circle back to Gary from Kiwiwana, because I know they use this fairly routinely. And let's see if we could bring some information back. I know I have seen over and over how people do it with the crystals and other things, but I've never sat down and put together a feature on it, so I think I'm going to have to go there now. The reason I brought this up is I was thinking as I was driving home from the symposium yesterday that this keeps getting mentioned. It got mentioned in Philadelphia. It got mentioned in New Jersey's symposium. It got mentioned yesterday in Chester County's symposium. And new beekeepers are hearing about this. And when new beekeepers hear about this, they want to try it and they don't know much about it. I liked what Landy Simone had to say yesterday afternoon about this. Is she did try it once back in the day and she killed a lot of bees. And she followed what people had told her to do. And she's very leery about this and said, you know, if people are going to experiment, they should be careful and take it seriously, especially if they're doing the vaporization method. And she's not convinced that this is the panacea that everybody keeps making it out to be. I kind of consider Landy a little bit like E.F. Hutton. When Landy talks, I'm going to pay attention because she knows what she's talking about. She's connected with a lot of folks and, you know, I'm not saying there's not a future for this, but I'd really like to know how they're going to do it and have success and not harm their bees. And that's really the key, is I don't want any catastrophic, and I don't want others to have catastrophic problems by not doing this stuff well, especially if it harms people. So if you're thinking about oxalic, please be careful with this stuff. So it looks like I have about 5 minutes to spare. Let me go ahead and get to closing comments. I had a response on my listener search from Lincoln, Nebraska. I wanted to say hi to Greg Hendrickson. Thanks for writing in, Greg. Greg is from the region and might be the person who triggered the metric we saw on our map from the bottom of our homepage. And since he's the only one that checked in, we'll consider him the one we were looking for. He spent some time in response letting me know that he started last year with a couple of nukes and through a series of circumstances didn't have a good year, but's looking for greater success this year. It strikes a chord, and I hear this on occasion, that he appreciates our local hive report. He said he likes following our trials and tribulations. Kevin Moment, I think we have more tribulations than we should. End of Kevin Moment. And what we're planning for our future. He enjoys, but not in a sadistic way, that we share our problems and feels a kindred spirit that he's not the only one who has setbacks. He gave a shout out to Gary and Margaret, our friends over at the Kiwi Mana podcast, and Solomon's effort on the Treatment Free podcast. Like many new beekeepers, it appears he's jumped headlong into things, and he said that his wife is sick of hearing about the bees. Funny how that goes. And Greg, my Sharon thinks I'm absolutely nuts, but at least she still smiles and nods sometimes. So Greg, we'll look to see what we could send your way. I didn't get an address, but I'll write an email back. I've been contemplating getting some tchotchkes for the podcast. T-shirts, buttons, magnets, decals, something like that. You know, I actually just ordered myself some business cards the other day. I've never had any for the podcast, and I suppose I could have thought about this before I put the challenge out there, but one way or another, I'll make good on it. So let me tee up the challenge for this episode. Saw a visitor from Oliphant, Pennsylvania tonight. Oliphant? I don't know how you say it. It's like the actor. That's what it looked like it was spelled. If you're that person, write in. Say hello. Tell me what you're doing out there. Send an email to kevin@bkcorner.org as we're trying to get a sense of who's listening and checking in with us here on the podcast. Actually, that offer stands for anybody who's listening in. If you want to say hello, tell me where you're from, what you're up to, feel free to write in to that email address, kevin@bkcorner.org, and keep an eye on what we have going on at our website. As things go, I know I have a couple things in the queue for the next episode. I'll be back in a couple weeks or so. Just talked to Joe Lewis, as I think I mentioned earlier in the show. Sometimes forget that stuff. Caught up with Joe yesterday, and I'll have a recount of what I learned at the Chesco Bees. I wanted to talk about the plan for this year and breaking the year up. And I sat in on a talk yesterday from Landy Simone, who talked about her beekeeping year. And I thought there's some really insightful things there to examine, so I'll bring that back for the next episode and a couple other things that we saw at Chesco. And special thanks to the Chester Beekeepers Association. Great event yesterday, Really enjoyed that. Didn't get a chance to head over to see Dewey Karen today. Just too much to do. Thought about it, but then got up this morning and said, nah, can't make that go. Maybe next year. I heard last year was really good, so I'm kind of kicking myself. But, you know, there's only so many days in the world. And getting a break today and just kind of hanging around the house was really important to me. So I took a day off from beekeeping in that sense. But I produced a lot of stuff today. So, yep, tired, rambling. Time to go. That's all there is for today. Until next time, remember, like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we accomplish great things. Thanks for listening, everyone, and be well.